You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 11th of August 2017 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Andrew Muller on today's show.
The people of our country are safe, our allies are safe, and I will tell you this, North Korea better get their act together or they're going to be in trouble like few nations ever have been in trouble in this world.
President Donald Trump has been saying words again. My guests Tom Edwards, Daniel Giacopelli and Fernando Augusto Pacheco will be discussing this and the day's other top stories, including the relative trustworthiness of media outlets, the relative newsworthiness of South American crises, and with due acknowledgement that this link is less than seamless, the relatives, specifically grandfathers, competing for the title of Sao Paulo's most handsome. That's all coming up on Midori House right now. So, welcome to Midori House. My guests today are Tom Edwards, Daniel Giacopelli, and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Welcome all. And we will start, as is increasingly often the case, with the White House, where, not for the first time, the unsupervised intern running the social media outreach has gotten carried away with himself, threatening to visit nuclear apocalypse upon North Korea and its general vicinity. Twitter has suspended accounts for less. In another reminder that it's 2017, President Donald Trump has also found the time to thank his Russian counterpart slash line manager Vladimir Putin for instructing the United States to remove or cashier 750 diplomatic staff stationed in Russia. Danny, as our American representative, North American representative at least, at this table, looking at the North Korea thing first, should we be paying more attention to the fact that nobody is evacuating thousands of their nationals from South Korea and that the people of Seoul do not appear to be sort of frantically looting grocery stores in anticipation of the apocalypse?
Well, I mean, they're not doing that because they've been here before. I mean, it's a war of words, you know, maybe not with such intense rhetoric, but I mean, this is kind of the status quo. I mean, everything that I've read about South Korea right now in Seoul, it's pretty much business as usual. You do have some frightened people in some interviews saying this is a bit alarming, but I think you should look to Guam now instead of South Korea, because actually earlier this week, earlier today, I mean, they kind of distributed this list of tips for residents of what to do when a missile does get shot, you know, kind of like old Cold War style, cover your head, don't look at the fireball. That's a bit scary, but they're not panicking.
And absolutely none of which will do any good.
with
apologies to our many listeners on Guam. Fernando, what do you think? Is this going to be with us for a while, the North Korean crisis, or is Trump going to get bored by the end of this weekend and move on to something else?
I think he actually will not move to something else. I think we might hear that for the next, you know, few months. But I kind of almost hope he does move on because, you know, of course, as Danny said, maybe we don't have reasons to be worried. But, you know, nevertheless, if something happens, you know, it can be like a major war that we haven't seen for years. So it is a bit worrying, but I also think in the end, nothing's going to happen.
Tom Edwards, North Korea is still threatening to do this thing of lobbing missiles in the general vicinity of Guam. If they do actually do that, though I'm not sure why they would telegraph it if they're actually serious about it, but if they do actually do that, what, and I emphasize this adjective, sensible options does the United States then have?
Well, this is the interesting point, and I think to sort of flip that question around, what strikes me as particularly interesting here is that the most unpredictable, erratic, and potentially dangerous maneuverings and pronouncements aren't coming from Pyongyang in this example.
It must be quite disorienting for them.
It's clearly a strategy which is completely wrong-footed, Kim Jong-un.
Hang on, we're the same reasonable ones all of a sudden.
I don't think there's that many pronouncements that have come out of Pyongyang that you could take issue with, given the antagonism from Trump.
Well, they did say they're going to turn America into jelly a few hours ago.
Well, yeah, but after...
Only
after Donald Trump had said that the US military was locked and loaded. He's talking like he's in a cowboy film. The reassurance I draw is twofold, Andrew. First, the point you made, which is that I don't see, you know, the residents of Seoul, nor the many Americans in South Korea, military men and other private citizens, battening down the hatches. And secondly, there appear to be one or two adults still in the room on Capitol Hill, including Jim Mattis, a military man. And I don't know, I draw some solace from the fact that he's said that, you know, the tragedies of war are well known. You don't need to describe it in any other way than catastrophic. You know, Jim Mattis understands what this sort of true consequence of any sort of war or conflict are. And I think people should look for reassurance to that.
Maybe they could just give Trump a fake button, let him press it, and then hustle him into a bunker and leave him there.
But I mean,
What about skip the fake button and just lock him up in a bunker?
Just throwing it out there.
But back to what they really could do. So, I mean, there's the THAAD system. So if North Korea is crazy enough, bold enough to shoot a missile, which they say they're going to do, over Japan, 30 miles off the coast of Guam, what America will most likely do is try to shoot it down with the THAAD system, which has worked 15 out of 15 times. None of those times have been in a time of war. So it's a big gamble. I mean, if you miss, that's really bad. That's a propaganda loss of extreme magnitudes for the U.S. If you shoot it down, that's the complete opposite. I mean, you show that you're the powerful, you know, muscular hypernation. But it's a big gamble. I mean, if you're Trump, do you try to shoot it down? You're probably going to have to try to shoot it down.
Speaking as the United States designated representative at this table, Danny, we should move on to this other story of Donald Trump apparently thanking Vladimir Putin for compelling the United States to withdraw or cashier 750 embassy staff in Russia. The actual State Department called Russia's maneuver a regrettable and uncalled for act. Trump's inner circle are now claiming the whole he's just joking thing, but
he was joking. I mean, it's really? If you're in the State Department.
But how do you tell anymore?
Yeah, if you're in the State Department, that hurts, obviously, if you got literally fired and deported from Russia because of what just happened. But, I mean, let's be a little bit fair to Trump. That probably was in jest. I mean,
is it the sort of thing he should be joking about? Isn't his first job to actually defend his people?
Of course. But we're so beyond that. I mean,
well, that's true.
I mean, but, Trump's whole motivation is to find a win in everything. So this was a kind of a big loss for the U.S., getting all these diplomats kicked out. So what's the win? Well, it's saving us money. Ha, ha, ha. You know, shame's on you.
I admire, Andrew, your continued desire to try and invest any sort of expectation that Trump may behave like a rational actor in this sort of thing. To me, it's an absolutely bird-brained remark. It's completely juvenile, facile point. It's exactly the kind of thing I would have expected him to do. I don't think you could even defend it by saying, oh, it's just a joke, because his pronouncements are so comedic, whether deliberate or inadvertent. It doesn't surprise me at all. He's devaluing the idea of the rhetoric of the president being relevant. And in a sense, the fact that the North Korean official news agency continues to counter his bombast with that of their own, I think it invests it with more worth than it should have. What we're realizing, and we learned this during the campaign, is that anything that Trump says is essentially worthless and meaningless, whether it's a threat, whether it's a promise, whatever he says. He functions in a vacuum. So there seems to be no consequence to anything he says.
But also, to play devil's advocate, I mean, that probably also did piss off Vladimir Putin a little bit too.
I strongly doubt it.
No, I still think Vladimir Putin just laughs himself to sleep every single night.
Yeah, perhaps. But I mean,
He's more than got the measure of Trump, and I'm sure that those meetings, the sort of marginal bilateral they had and the more formal ones, will have confirmed to him what he already knew, which was that he's a polished political performer. He's well-versed at tweaking the nose of the establishment or the rest of the world whenever he wants to, Putin. And I'm sure he's more than delighted with Trump. And when he makes these lunatic pronouncements, I agree with Andrew. I think Putin's probably rather happy.
Fernando, do we have to give up already on any idea that his new chief of staff, the former Marine General John Kelly, is actually going to bring him under any kind of control?
I certainly give up personally, but yeah, I think perhaps we should. I don't know much about John Kelly, but I guess you know it's not going to be a major change.
Somebody, Andrew, needs to take his phone away.
Yeah.
And I can't. Yes. I sometimes wonder whether that's all it would take.
Well, I mean, even today, I think it was earlier today, you know, not in the White House, but Nikki Haley fired two people. I mean, the staff turnaround is so intense and unlike anything we've seen. You know, I think Kelly could get a little bit of more grips on it than Reince Priebus did, but it's probably still hopeless.
Well, I think there's a reasonable chance that we might come up with further cause to discuss Donald Trump's presidency. So let's move on to a somewhat related story, because when Donald Trump began his unlikely run for the White House, he did realize that he was unlikely to get much in the way of good reviews from the reality-based media, and therefore sought to undermine it, giving rise to the whole fake news meme. Somewhat hearteningly then, a new survey by the University of Missouri has found that trust in what is derided by cranks and bores as the MSM is holding up quite well, although it's holding up best of all in British outlets, interestingly. Tom, we do have to insert the caveat that this was a self-selecting online poll of just 9,000 respondents, possibly therefore qualifying as fake news in itself. But big scores for The Economist, Public Television, Reuters, BBC, NPR and PBS. Do we learn more here about the participants than the outlets?
Potentially. I think, as ever, with something like trust in the media, it depends how useful a blanket phrase like that can be. You know, to learn that essentially two out of three Americans trust the mainstream media sounds like a relatively good news story. But even just on the numbers, that still means every third person doesn't.
And that's a lot of people.
And that's a lot of people
who believe that, you know, the moon landings were hoaxed.
Exactly, in the many dozens of millions.
Now.
But I think you need to dig a little deeper.
You've got something you want to say about the moon landings, Danny?
Oh, well, I'd be interested, precisely as you did, you reeled off a few, you know, trusted outlets, and I'm making those air quote marks there, the likes of the BBC, NPR, public broadcasters, which remain trusted. You know, I guess even amongst a larger proportion of that 9,000 would say that they trusted those, what would we call them, proper grown-up news outlets. And I wonder whether that's changed that much throughout the whole of the fake news sort of era that we've been in. And what's been interesting, of course, is to look at things like subscriptions to proper broadsheet newspapers and other sites of record. Those have gone up, certainly post-Trump's success. So, you know, if the main outcome of this fake news cycle is that it drives people back to grown-up media, spending money on journalists and fact-checking stories and investing in proper journalism, then that's no bad thing. One thing that did reassure me is that the likes of Breitbart, which tragically are still bracketed in with some of these other proper providers, fared very poorly, even amongst this madcap self-selecting 9,000. So hopefully the truth is starting to dawn on people about some of these less desirable elements of the media.
Fernando, if there was a trend to this survey, it was that there were bigger scores rather for what we might think of as heritage media, the sort of the bastions of the pre-internet media with slightly sketchier stories for online on-screen startups. What does that tell us? That there is still a cachet to those old brands?
Absolutely. I think the legacy brands are still more important, actually. As Tone said, especially after we've been talking a lot about fake news, I think especially the kind of person that likes to follow the news, you know, they invest even more. So all the major newspapers, the sales are on the rise. Magazines that talk about current affairs are also on the rise in terms of circulation, revenue. And it's interesting, you know, I was not questioning this poll, but I do trust the brands. In fact, all the brands that I've not trusted, I don't trust, and the brands that are trusted, I trust. So I'm not saying that I'm the average person that would answer this questionnaire, but it sounded very truthful to me.
Danny, there were a couple of weird anomalies, I thought. BuzzFeed, which has done some really good proper news reporting in among its lists of adorable cats, rated very, very low, surprisingly.
Yeah, very surprisingly. I mean, BuzzFeed was the second to last on the list. So BuzzFeed is less trustworthy, according to these people, than InfoWars, which is, I could say kind of batshit crazy, conspiracy theory laden, Alex Jones site. Less than Trump himself, less than Fox, Blaze, Rush Limbaugh. BuzzFeed News is really good. I mean, people think of BuzzFeed, they'll probably think of cat videos.
Because that's what it based its brand on originally.
News unit
but
is fantastic.
But isn't this the problem, that if you are a brand, you know, the whole brand matters. People are savvy enough now, they already take their news from fragmented
sources.
Except
that's kind of unsavvy in being able to distinguish from BuzzFeed's news section, which, as Danny says, is very good, and its cat videos. Although, actually, BuzzFeed does cat videos very well as well.
They're good cat videos, but I think if you're an audience and you see a significant investment in cat videos, you are going to, I think, understandably, perhaps not justifiably, question the broader editorial policy.
And even when you go to the BuzzFeed website, I think the average user, you know, the news are usually at the bottom of the website.
This
so you,
is true.
So you wouldn't notice. You probably see the 15 best ways to put avocado on your toast, but you wouldn't see a political
that
story.
That was very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
We also do, as you said, have to question the methodology of this poll. I mean, BuzzFeed has responded. And their spokesperson said, this is an open-ended, methodologically flawed survey of people who happen to fill in a form. It's not scientific. Because, I mean, if you look, one of the news outlets here is just internet. Well, I mean, what the hell is that?
I look at it every day.
And Trump himself, I mean, you know.
I find the internet very reliable, yeah, Danny. I don't know what your issue is.
And people didn't seem to have much faith in internet because it seems to be one of the least trusted sources.
So how did telephone poll?
Yeah, fax machine.
I mean, again, it's an obviously skewed poll because, again, it was hard to avoid noticing that conservative outlets, Breitbart, InfoWars, Fox, Rush Limbaugh, all of which, in fairness to an objective, you know, in an objective sense, are to some degree completely crazy. But what was this, just a survey filled in by latte slurping, sandal wearing monocle readers, frankly?
It might have been very different. It's hard to know. I mean, like I said, I think you need to look for some more objective statistical analysis. And that is, you know, who's selling on newsstand, who's building subscriptions. And there are good news stories out there from responsible media outlets, proper media, not aggregators of cat video and the rest. But yeah, we
where do you get your news?
To be fair, we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And it is true that there are new establishments who tackle things in a different way, and it doesn't mean that they cannot be trusted or shouldn't be trusted, and you need to trust to a more discriminating, in the correct way, public.
I was going to ask each of you on this just finally, and just quickly I'll go around the table, starting with you, Fernando. It's like, who would you have polled at the top? By which I mean, you know, Monocle and Monocle 24 aside,
of course.
Obviously. when something huge happens, when you realise that the big story is breaking, what's your first port of call if you want to be brought up to date? Where do you go?
Do you know where I go? To my favorite broadsheets, which, I go to the New York Times, I go to Folha de São Paulo, the newspaper from Brazil. I'm the kind of person, I read the paper. I'm not, you know, I do watch the BBC or MSNBC sometimes, but yeah, a good paper, definitely.
Danny?
The New York Times or the FT.
Tom?
Probably public radio that's properly public in a normal country.
Send your emails to te@monocle.com.
So you mean like the BBC, for example,
like BBC.
Or dare I say it, the ABC in Australia?
Well, no, or the CBC, or if you listen on NPR in the States, I think, you know, that's a proper authoritative voice that you can find engaging and, to the most part, trust.
Well, on that thought, we will take a short break. You are listening to Midori House with me, Andrew Muller, along with Tom Edwards, Daniel Giacopelli, and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up next, should Brazil be worrying us at least as much as Venezuela is?
Gotland, an isolated Swedish island in the middle of the Baltic Sea, has more to it than meets the eye. Monocle Films lands on Gotland to see how the flare-up in the Baltic region has seen tensions rising in Sweden.
My impression is that the Baltic states feel moral pressure from the Russian side. We have espionage in Sweden. We work with it all the time, and it's very important for Sweden to have capability to defend our democracy.
Out on the film pages of Monocle.com.
You're back with Midori House with me, Andrew Muller. Still with me are Tom Edwards, Daniel Giacopelli, and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Now, a great deal of attention has recently been paid to the travails besetting Venezuela, and quite rightly. But whenever attention is being paid to something, that usually means attention isn't being paid to something else. And in this case, Brazil has rather drifted from the radar of Western media outlets, which struggle to care about two South American countries at once. But Brazil's ongoing chaos, one former president in jail, one impeached, and an incumbent who could end up either or both, is a huge story. Fernando, helpfully, you are in fact Brazilian.
I mean, it
sounds huge even to somebody such as myself who doesn't know Brazil and has in fact ridiculously never been there. But from a Brazilian point of view, and in terms of recent Brazilian history, how How dramatic a turning point does the country now seem to be at?
Listen, it is very dramatic. And I know some people are saying why people don't pay attention to Brazil. I think it's very easy in this question when you compare it to Venezuela. Because in Venezuela, I mean, they have more acute problems. You know, we have a problem in our political system, quite complex. But to be honest, the average Brazilian, okay, the unemployment is rising, but maybe the average Brazilian is not really feeling at the moment, you know.
Is that because the country is still basically functional? You know, water comes out of the taps, things work, you can get stuff when you need it, etc.
Absolutely. I mean, just look at the numbers in Venezuela. I believe like 75% of the population is actually losing weight because they don't have food to eat, you know. So that's something that I certainly not happen in Brazil. But I think, yeah, we do have very complex problems. And I do think, on average, Western media doesn't cover Brazil very well. Except Monaco.
I'm joking.
Obviously. But you're joking. You think we don't cover it well.
No,
or you think everybody else does cover it well. Come on, Fernando. Pick a side here.
We do it well.
I think so. Tom, is that just it? That South America seems like an awfully long way away from the point of view of Western media, unless, you know, Argentina is invading the Falklands or something?
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm more inclined to think, I'd agree with what Fernando said. I think you look at problems, okay, you know, corruption may be endemic. It certainly looks that way. You rattled off the list of, you know, the political classes who are either, you know, in jail, facing trial, or associated with corruption. But, you know, essentially there are still democratic institutions functioning. You know, you still have rule of law.
Well, the fact that people are being impeached, tried and convicted does actually tell you something.
And there may be very heavy political bias behind some of these bids, depending on where you stand in the spectrum. But you're also dealing with an economy. Okay, it's struggling, a long recession. There's systemic problems that need to be addressed. But this is still a big economy. It's, you know, South America's powerhouse, whatever. I think that it is very different than Venezuela. I don't think the Western media is complacent. I agree with Fernando. Maybe there's a difficulty at grasping the nettle sometimes. But if you go back just a few years when there were some really often very violent protests, you know, there were times, going back, Faith, 3-4 years,
yeah,
when society seemed maybe more riven than it is. And I think that was reflected. I don't think people were brushing it on the carpet. If anything, if you think about pre-World Cup or the Olympics and this kind of thing, Brazil probably faced greater scrutiny, certainly from Western media, than perhaps at any time since it became a democracy again.
Certainly when it had the World Cup backing up into the Olympics, that obviously focuses a lot of global attention. But on that point, Tom raised, Fernando, that there were quite, you know, violent protests in Brazil at one point. Why did that dissipate? Is it just that the corruption story has become so endemic and so chronic that people have just kind of given up caring?
I think so. I think Brazilians are sedated at the moment. We have protests daily, but, you know, not many people go to the protests. Like, I remember, like, a few years ago, like, major parts of the population used to go. Now, only, like, if you... activists, you know, the number of Brazilians going to the streets, because people get tired, because, you know, they went to protest, nothing changed, and we're going to have elections next year as well. So I think next year will be the big year for Brazil. This year, you know, some people want to remove Temer from power. I don't think it's going to happen. I think we have to wait until next year.
One thing that does worry me a little bit about Brazil is precisely that kind of apathy that Fernando's talking about. And so often when you get apathetic populations, when they go to the ballot box, you then see them looking towards nationalists and right-wingers. And that would be a cause for concern. Now, I think the dynamic is a bit different in Brazil, and Faye knows much more than me. But, you know, if you see politically a shift right, then that would be a cause for concern. And that's something that could, of course,
It might happen, because the second place in the polls is a far-right guy, Jair Bolsonaro, which, in fact, is a big fan of Trump. He says, you know, he
wants... help us.
Oh, yes. Good.
So,
law and order, man, like Duterte, right?
Yes, and we never had, after our dictatorship, because, you know, the far-right had terrible connotations in the country. But the far-right might be back. I don't think he's going to win, but again, let's not say anything at this stage.
Well, clearly, you know, people do have to come up with new ways to engage audiences in stories about Brazil and stories about Brazil's corruption. Fernando, is a musical the way forward here? Because if you could perhaps explain, somebody is attempting this.
Yes, and can I say, finally, I think it's a great idea, because we've been...
At last, the musical.
Exactly. No, because, you know, to be honest with you, We didn't have many films or even soap operas based on this corruption scandal. So I think it's a very welcome. Apparently, it's going to be a funny comedy. So and it's going to start with the former governor of Rio being arrested. I don't know how funny would that be, but
see, I'm coming at this from the perspective that holds that there are there's almost never an excuse for a musical.
Yeah, well, you know,
I'd need to be persuaded of extenuating circumstances.
Andrew, you would love the Book of Mormon. You would.
It's a musical.
But in Straightened Times, don't we need a song and dance number?
There'd be dance routines.
I wish, because, you know, of the Operation Car Wash, they play Car Wash, you know, the song by Rolls Royce from 1976.
It's a catchy tune.
It's a catchy tune. I can see the opening with a lot of kind of dollars coming from the sky, you know.
Is this just a way for the people of Brazil to kind of, you know, like Schadenfreude, like vent their kind of, you know, frustrations and watch their elected officials get arrested on stage?
Yes, we need, and actually there'll be the Operation Car Wash, the musical. There'll be a film as well called Federal Police, The Law is for Everyone, which is a bit of a cheesier film about the Operation Car Wash as well, but that's still in production. I welcome those.
Anybody got any political scandals that they wish had been or could yet be turned into musical theatre?
Well, I guess the obvious thing in this country at the moment is Brexit, which grips everyone.
Brexit the musical.
Yeah, I don't know what subtext could be. I mean, it could be more focused on Theresa May, maybe the Book of Moron or something like that. That would work quite nicely. I don't know. Brexit I find too depressing, but I think it's an interesting idea. There was a fantastic documentary about Aussie politics, Andrew.
The Killing Season.
The Killing Season a couple of years back. That looked ripe for turning into musical theatre,
yep,
no?
Yep. But score by Nick Cave, possibly.
I can imagine that. Would that be macabre enough?
Yeah, that could work well. But finally tonight, and not dissimilar, not unlinked in tone, we do have a result in this year's iteration of Sao Paulo's annual Mr. Third Age contest, which seeks to name the city's most handsome grandfather. It is the fine figure of 76-year-old José dos Santos Neves. The contest is a city initiative to promote self-esteem in the elderly. Fernando, you are not merely Brazilian. You are actually from Sao Paulo. I'm guessing...
You're very handsome, too.
Yeah, exactly. 30, 40 years from now, I'm betting big on Fernando Pacheco. But I'm guessing Mr. Third Age sounds better in Portuguese as an expression,
yeah,
right?
A little bit. It's called Mr. Terceira Idade, but...
That's much nicer.
It's nice, you know, but I love this competition, actually. It's been happening for 10 years, and it's a kind of a, you know, it's a, like a governmental thing in São Paulo, where, you know, there's honestly a parade of very handsome elderly men, and we choose the best looking of them.
If you're an ugly elderly man?
But don't worry, because there's five prizes. There's,
yeah. Wait, why are you telling me not to worry? Oh, no. What are you?
There's the Mr. Shy, Mr. Elegance, Mr. Smile, Mr. Friendliness, and Mr. Beauty.
Are they nominated by their families, or is it kind of a nationwide hunt for the most handsome grandfathers?
You can apply, but there's a little bit of a hunt. And of course, this...
Is it nationwide, or is it strictly Paulistas only?
That's only São Paulo, but I was doing some research. There's loads of other competitions like this in Brazil. So, and you know why this is so popular in Brazil? Because I think one of the things I like about Brazil is how people deal with old age there. Even though people say, oh, we're plastic surgery obsessed, whatever, I think to be an old person in Brazil, it's actually quite nice. It's very accepted if you go to the beach wearing a bikini, even if you're 70 or 18. People will not comment on your body, you know. I think that's a wonderful thing.
Will you be retiring there?
Yeah, I hope so. Maybe I'll apply for this competition.
I don't think Fernando would be shy in retiring anywhere, Danny.
I'll get the Mr. I don't know, Mr. Elegance? I would like that.
I was thinking of putting myself down for that.
Apparently they've removed Mr. Curmudgeon from the list this year. So you'll have to await for a new category.
By the way, it's not only grandpas, right?
I was about to ask, is there an equivalent contest for grandmothers?
Because, funnily enough, Father's Day is this Sunday in Brazil. So they usually do around Father's Day, and Mother's Day is in May. So we have the... You know, the hottest grammar in it. Sorry, I don't know if that's how can I translate.
I think hottest grammar
is the actual
different.
Is that the actual
no,
title?
I'm so sorry. No, the prettiest grammar.
Most elegant grammar.
Yeah. I would definitely put my grandma on this guy.
Do they have this? Did you get these kind of events in Wagga Wagga, Andrew?
I'm not sure.
Not to the best of my knowledge. Funnier things have happened, I suppose. No, I don't think so.
Or on Long Island, Danny? There must be one there.
Oh, I'm sure there's that on Long Island where I'm from. No doubt about it.
That happy thought does bring
very,
us
very
to
tan faces.
Does bring us to the conclusion of today's show, and a very happy Father's Day to all our listeners in Brazil. Tom Edwards, Daniel Giacopelli, and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, thank you for joining us. Today's show was produced by Carlotta Rabello, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco, Isabel Rosen, and Audrey Fyodorenko, and our studio manager was Christy Evans. More music next at 1900. I think I'm right in saying it's Marcos Hippie with The Menu, and there's more on the day's main stories on The Daily at 2200. I'll be your host for that as well. Midori House returns on Monday, 1800 London time. I'm Andrew Muller. Thanks for listening.